Hey there, welcome to Beauty at Work. We're in between seasons at the moment, so please enjoy this clip from one of our earlier episodes. What makes beauty relevant to science? In this clip, Cambridge philosopher Dr. Milena Ivanova shares the story of how she came to study this fascinating intersection of aesthetics and science and what she's learned in the process. Here's what she has to say.
I was definitely interested in the concept of beauty way before I went to university. And that's probably because I grew up during the communist regime in Bulgaria. And I was really interested in architecture. And the immediately visual kind of buildings around me were not very beautiful at all. There were these concrete structures that were built to, you know, house a lot of people. They were built with a particular design and function in mind, but they were really not very visually pleasing. Whereas on the other hand, our historic buildings are incredibly beautiful. And so I developed interest in architecture and just constantly pondered to this question, like, why don't we build more beautiful buildings around here? Why is our neighborhood looking so gray and not very appealing? Not visually kind of pleasing at all, but then you go into other places and you feel like the works, you know, the buildings are works of art and you really admire them and you have special experiences when you appreciate them. And so definitely it was in my mind, but it never occurred to me that science can be beautiful until I went to university.
Wow, great, great. So tell me, I mean, the concept of beauty has been criticized by many. It's been considered in some fields of the arts as outmoded. And, you know, the preference seems to be to talk about aesthetics more broadly. What makes beauty relevant to scientists as a concept? And is it helpful for understanding the practice of science?
I think it's definitely helpful. And I think it's really important that we understand what role it plays in scientific activities. We can understand why in art we have this move away from beauty, because art has developed in many different ways and we have, you know, have revolutionary art that challenges many concepts. One of them is what art is, and we have presentation of very ordinary, displeasing objects in an artistic setting. And then we get to wonder, is this really artwork? What makes it artwork? What's the positioning of an ordinary object like the Duchamp's urinal, that's positioning it in the museum or the art gallery, what makes it an artwork? What is it exactly about it? Because it's not the intrinsic features, is it? There's nothing very beautiful about the artifact itself. So we can see how traditionally we get to, you know, interrogate these concepts. And in philosophy of art and in history of art, we have very much the evolution of understanding what art is, what it's meant to do, and we get to see some artistic kind of works as experiments and actually asking these questions, right? We get to really consider how our reactions are, what intuitions are about what makes something an artwork when we're presented with these kind of experimental works, right? In science, it's really interesting that scientists continuously talk about beauty, no matter what the setting, no matter how science is changing. We see that it's a notion that continues to be used and that it plays interesting functions in reasoning, right? So we think that one interaction with beauty that we have when you start even inquiring something is just appreciating nature, and that can be triggering into investigation because we find nature beautiful. Many phenomena are incredibly beautiful. And that can spark fascination to find more about, you know, the function behind a particular phenomenon that we encounter. But we see that scientists use this concept also when they describe, you know, how they select hypotheses or design experiments or reconstruct images or, you know, present simulations or write code. And that idea that they're using these kind of aesthetic judgments and particularly think about beauty in those contexts is really interesting. And different scientists in different fields continuously talk about these features throughout different traditions as well. And what's really interesting is, you know, what is it doing there? Is it simply aiding selection when there's no other options, no other kind of criteria, perhaps, or considerations to help us make choices? Like if you have two explanations that fit with the phenomena and one is more beautiful, well, why not choose that, right? You can think that it's a purely heuristic kind of tool for us to use beauty. But there's so many scientists that say something much more substantial than this, that they think there's a special relationship between beauty and truth, and they think that beauty can be actually the factor that makes you trust a particular hypothesis or theory. And we find that this, you know, persists. And we have this idea going back from the ancient philosophers like Plato to people like Paul Dirac and Albert Einstein, to more recently scientists like Murray Gell-Mann, for instance, expressing these ideas. And so it's really fascinating that the scientists do make these kinds of judgments about beauty. They use it in different ways. And from the perspective of a philosopher, what I want to understand is, you know, is that a good idea? First of all, how are these judgments made? In what context? And then, is that a good idea? What exactly can we say beauty justifiably can do in scientific theorizing? That's the big question, or the big questions behind this kind of reasoning. But the more, I think, interesting question at the moment I'm thinking about is actually just understanding how these judgments enter in designing experiments and evaluating data, more kind of practice-related questions.
Yeah, no, that's great. So, yeah, because I mean, there's certainly, I would imagine, the experience of encountering the beauty of nature or of natural objects or the phenomena that scientists study might be fairly consistent across history, but then the kinds of particular heuristic uses of beauty, certain equations as guides to truth. I mean, is that mode of so seeing beauty in the sort of in scientific objects or in the process of doing science, do you see that as being a consistent feature of science, or is there something new to you know, is this basically, is the concept of beauty changed in some way in these dimensions of science?
I mean, my initial kind of approach was that, well, why should we expect that there is anything consistent among different scientists in different scientific periods, right? Science changes really dramatically in different kind of centuries, how it's done, thinking about experimental practice. Also, we see dramatic changes if we think about tabletop experiments in the 17th century, simple, very cheap stuff. You know, equipment is cheap. One person performs. And we think about today when thousands of people were involved in the construction of massive experimental setups. And, you know, there's such different ways of making an experiment, for instance, or the scientific theories as well, very different. Why should we expect there is anything stable? But I think there are ways to address this question and think that there is something stable, actually. And that's certain ways to understand beauty as a notion that captures a relationship of functionality, basically how well something suits its purpose. And that can be achieved by different ways. But there's something stable in appreciating optimality for purpose. And I think that kind of focus can help us escape this idea that, well, if people have such a different disagreeing conceptions of beauty, how can they possibly even say these judgments have any objectivity to them? And how could we think that scientists can agree among themselves when we talk about beauty? I think we think about that way, about functionality, appreciating functionality and optimality for purpose. We can think that, yeah, we can accommodate a lot of different ways of doing science and doing experiments and still appreciate this kind of intricate beauty behind that setup.
Yeah, could you give us an example of what that might look like, that appreciation for functionality and optimality across experiments, and, you know, the what role beauty plays there?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, so I've argued in my work that there, when we ask what makes an experiment beautiful, we can think about some very immediate features to experiments that come to our mind. So maybe I should give an example to this. You know, one very nice experiment that's really celebrated for its beauty is Leon Foucault's kind of experiment to demonstrate Earth's rotation. And that was performed in 1851 in the Pantheon in Paris. And it's a very simple experiment, which basically involves taking this brass sphere hanged on a rope and being swung in motion. And there was some sand underneath it. And so people could go into the Pantheon to see that experiment, and they would see this kind of kinetic sculpture around, you know, slowly moving. And, you know, there's something immediately beautiful about it. If you think about it, that experience of observing it is a pleasing experience to have. There are some visually pleasing features to that experiment, but I argue that these features are really not necessary or sufficient to our aesthetic appreciation of the experiment. I've argued that what really matters is how this experiment achieved its goal, what showed and how, right? And the beauty of that experiment lies exactly in this idea that by using these kind of very ordinary objects, very economical setup, the scientists had the ingenuity to create the setup that optimally showed the phenomenon that they wanted to show. So the experiment achieved its purpose. It had like optimality and functionality. And so these kinds of considerations, I think, are what matters and could be translated into, you know, a very complex experiment that perhaps will not have these visual features at all, or we will not be able to perceive anything about the results. Right, in large-scale experiments, it takes a really long time to really have confidence in what exactly results we have obtained. But when we think about the kind of functionality for purpose, we can still talk about beauty in that way and appreciate what really matters. And it's kind of the intellectual beauty, appreciating design for purpose, that seems to be able to carry over despite the difference in the experimental traditions we're thinking about.
Beauty at Work is brought to you by Templeton Religion Trust. If you enjoyed this clip, go check out the full episode. And please take a moment to subscribe and leave us a review. It really helps get the word out about the show. Thanks, and see you next time.